coalition forces and begin striking selected targets of military importance.
It would be a decision which could only be taken once.
There's no argument over the choice between peace and war.
Unconfirmed reports about Gaddafi being captured.
This morning, I want to talk about the future of Europe.
Burning Point.
Hello and welcome to the show. With me, Екатерина Кудашкина. In his 40-minute UN address, the US President Barack Obama said the world has become in many ways a safer and more prosperous place to live in, at the same time pointing to Russia as an even greater threat to the world's stability than the notorious IS. He said, and I quote, "Russian aggression in Europe recalls the days when large nations trampled small ones in pursuit of territorial ambition. We will reinforce our NATO allies," the US president said, "and uphold our commitment to collective defense. We will impose a cost on Russia for aggression and counter falsehoods with the truth," end quote. Now, what kind of rhetoric is that, and why would the US president resort to it days after plunging his own country into another military campaign in the Middle East? We're now joined by our guest speaker, William Bloom, American author and historian.
Well, the hostility of the U.S. towards Russia is not surprising. What's surprising is that he would use the occasion for the opening of the U.N. session to attack Russia, because it's totally irrelevant to the main issue being discussed, which is ISIS. And so he couldn't resist having this audience, this international audience. He couldn't resist throwing in some sharp criticism of Russia. And as I say, it's not surprising that the hostility exists, because the U.S. government, like all its predecessors, seeks to dominate the world. And this has been their policy for a century. And they recognize Russia as the main obstacle for American world domination. That is the reason for the hostility in general.
China presents way greater challenge to the U.S. world domination.
China is not critical of U.S. imperialism the way Russia is. Russia has been much more critical of U.S. foreign policy. The latest example of that is the Ukraine, of course. Well, China is second on the list. The U.S. has been surrounding Russia with NATO bases for decades now. China is also in the process of being surrounded by the U.S. The U.S. has announced a new policy for Asia, and I forget what they call it, but they don't call it what it should be called, which is to surround China. So the U.S. is not ignoring the possible danger of China to the empire either.
Now, Dr. Bloom, then what do we need to expect? Now, if we are a greater threat than the Islamic State, America is bombing Islamic State now. Is it going to bomb Russia?
No. The U.S. government, which has bombed, I have a list I sent out. They have bombed more than 30 countries since the end of the Second World War. But they only bomb countries which cannot defend themselves from bombing. Russia can defend itself, so they will not bomb Russia. It's very cowardly foreign policy, obviously.
The world has become a more secure place, said Mr. Obama. Now, obviously, this is an overestimation.
Well, the world is not safer now. That's just things. It's really ironic. His supporters, Obama's supporters, often state that he's more intelligent than George W. Bush. But in my opinion, Obama makes as many stupid statements as Bush ever did, again and again. And to say that the world is a safer place now is one of those stupid statements. There are wars going on all over the place, and the most terrible atrocities are being carried out. Why is it safer? His words are not meant to be taken very seriously by anybody who's informed. It's for the American public, which is not very informed.
I'm talking about American public and Obama's domestic policy. The impression from the outside is that he seems to be cornered, which means that his statements are also perhaps some kind of signals of desperation. Is that a correct impression, or is it different?
Well, that's what his supporters, the ones who've been supporting him for the past 7 or 8 years, when people criticize Obama's policies, that's their defense. It's their only defense. Well, he really means well Republicans don't let him act like a decent human being. The Republicans force him into acting the way he does, you know, which is meaningless because it can't be proven, and it doesn't matter anyhow because he will be judged by history by what he has done, not what supposedly lies at the bottom of his soul, which we haven't seen yet. So he will be judged by what he does, and based on what he does, he is the most militaristic president of the U.S. that has ever existed. He has now bombed 7 countries. There's no American president who could say the same thing. 7 countries he's bombed, and each of them is an absolute act of war. The main objective of U.S. foreign policy for many, many years, for decades, has been world domination. They have thought this for over a century, and it's just maybe hard to accept by many people, especially in the U.S., but that's the only explanation for their policy, world domination. And anybody who stands in the way of that is an enemy, and control of the Middle East is a vital part of this world domination. And in the Middle East, the countries in recent times which have stood in the way of American domination have been Iraq, Libya, and Syria. And the U.S. has already overthrown the government of Iraq. They've overthrown the government of Libya. And in the process now of overthrowing the government of Syria. This bombing of ISIS in Syria, I'm sure, has the second ambition to harm to the Syrian military. It's easier for the U.S. to overcome them. And they'll be bombing every day now for who knows how long. And I don't know to what extent, if any, Syria has agreed to this policy. I don't know if they have any choice. But I'm sure that part of the motivation for Washington is to do damage to the military capability of Syria.
So, and what are the next steps which you could forecast in medium-term perspective?
I don't know. I would not have predicted that the U.S. would be bombing Syria today. We're talking about a bunch of crazy people. The people who run this government are crazy, and there's no predicting what insanity they will do next. And that's not simply for the sake of a dominating world. It's certainly for economical reasons, ideological reasons, and to help and to aid Israel. There are reasons. It's not irrational, but it's not humanitarian in any way. It's not logical in from the point of view of humanity.
Sir, thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was American author and historian William Bloom. This is Burning Point. We're looking into the details of Barack Obama's UN address. Well, there must be a reason why the U.S. president would try to designate Russia as the main adversary of the United States. And this is something we're proceeding to discuss with our next guest speaker, Paul Craig Roberts, chairman of the Institute of Political Economy and assistant secretary of Treasury during the presidency of Ronald Reagan.
The United States foreign policy follows the Wolfowitz doctrine, which says that the United States must not allow any other country to attain sufficient power and influence to be able to block American purposes in the world. And so with the rise of Russia under Putin, and of course with the economic rise of China, this foreign policy is being put into operation. The alarm bell, I think, was when it became clear that the Russian government would not go along with an American military invasion of Syria or Iran, and the Russian government worked out alternative solutions to the problem that Washington had formed. And this showed Washington that Russia was not going to be a puppet state. And they have learned this also from China. So the response, of course, to China has been to build new naval and air bases from the Philippines all the way to Vietnam in order that the United States can control the flow of resources in the South China Sea. And with Russia for the last 2 years, it's been ramping up the Russian threat so that the American populations and those in East and West Europe would accept more military spending and more bases on Russia's border in the Baltics, in Eastern Europe, in Georgia, and of course now in Ukraine. So these are deliberate, intentional moves to present Russia and China with military threats in addition to whatever economic leverage the United States can mount with sanctions, with attacks on currency, with a propaganda that destabilizes the economic relations of Russia and China with other countries. So the Russian and Chinese response has been to try to move outside the dollar payment system such that they trade with other countries in their own currencies. This then makes it harder for economic sanctions or economic imperialism to be conducted against Russia and China by Washington. And so that is the current situation. The BRICS, I don't know what the original thought was behind the formation of Russia, China, India, Brazil, and South Africa into a trade bloc that uses its own currency, but I suspect it was a way of resisting American financial hegemony and a way of ensuring their sovereignty and independence. And so what Washington is finding is that its aggression, both militarily implied and economic aggression, is causing a change in the international payment system that was established at Bretton Woods after World War II. And if this change goes through and succeeds, has success, then it will weaken the power of Washington because a great deal of Washington's power is based on the dollar's use as world reserve currency. So how this plays out remains to be seen. I have always been puzzled by the slowness in the response of threatened countries such as Russia and China to the moves taken against them. The protests may have been small and may have been weak, but what it shows is that there are Russians, even in Moscow, who either are so poorly informed that they don't know what the situation is in Ukraine, or they are Russians who are willing to be used by Washington in behalf of Washington's propaganda. Now, this is a problem for the Russian government, who are paid just as the Maidan protests were put into the streets by Washington. Russia has got two different groups. They have what is being called the Eurasian sovereignists. That is, the people who want to hold Russia together, the Russians together, who are behind the government. And then you have what are called the Atlanticist integrationists, who want to be integrated into Europe. And those people may be gullible, or they may be American agents, but they are a factor inside the Russian government itself. And so what these people think the future lies with being integrated into Europe. But the only way that can occur is if Russia is willing to assume the puppet role, the vassal state role, that Germany and France and Great Britain assume under the Americans. And so that's not a realistic alternative for Russia.
Sir, thank you so much. And just a reminder, this time our guest speaker was Paul Craig Roberts, chairman of the Institute of Political Economy and Assistant Secretary of Treasury during the presidency of Ronald Reagan. Well, and with this, we end this edition of Burning Point, brought to you by me, Ekaterina Kudashkina. Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye, and take care.